Support for Illinois Lawmakers comes from the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute at Southern Illinois University, Carbondale. Information available at paulsimoninstitute.org.
State of Illinois, Bruce Rauner and his party wish to be admitted to this chamber.
Mr. Dorkey, please admit the governor.
Welcome to a special live edition of Illinois Lawmakers on Illinois Public Radio and television stations as Governor Bruce Rauner delivers his third annual State of the State speech to a joint session of the Illinois General Assembly in Springfield. Hello, I'm Jack Titchener, along with Rich Miller of CapitalFacts.com and Amanda Vinicky, correspondent for WTTW Chicago Tonight. Rich, what do we expect the governor to say? Lots of anticipation here as the Senate tries to negotiate a budget.
The preview that he sent out to reporters was all positivity and hopefulness and bipartisanship. The reality is quite different. It's a dystopian nightmare in this building right now of hyper-partisanship, non-cooperation. There is some stuff going on across the hall. We're sitting in the House chambers. In the Senate, they are working on some cooperative bipartisan measures. But overall, the last 2 years have been gridlock and a nightmare.
Amanda, you obviously see it pretty much the same way. We're in a situation where the state's gone without a budget for nearly 2 years now, and the Senate's trying to patch something together. What brought Senate President John Cullerton and Republican leader Christine Redonio together at this point?
What brought them together, I think, is just the mess that the state is in. You hear from all corners that this instability just won't do. We truly are in a historic place and in the worst of all ways. Will the governor talk about that much in the State of the State address? We'll see. He's got his budget address coming up later, so I don't expect him to be there. As Rich said, the preview was all sunshine, rainbows, and bipartisanship, though you haven't had the governor actually sign on at all to this bipartisan Senate compromise. And in fact, there's a lot of talk about his, quote, underlings, is I believe how Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel termed it, trying to undermine the deal, in fact.
So at this point, of course, they're talking tax increases. They're talking a 13-part or more grand bargain, all kinds of ways that this could go off the rails, Rich.
Well, you know, in the past, if all four leaders and the governor aren't pulling in the same direction, these gigantic bills tend to fall apart. And to their credit, they are managing to hold it together with spit and baling wire over in the Senate so far.
And they're negotiating aspects of this even as we talk.
Right. Maybe up on the podium.
They were. That's
one of the few times it seems that you actually have the governor and the Democratic leader standing together is during these big speeches when they have a couple of minutes left.
Yeah, and he spent tens of millions of dollars criticizing the speaker in campaigns last year, so we'll see.
Well, I want to say welcome to our guests in the gallery and welcome to our members of the media. Thank you for joining us today. And good afternoon to everyone here. It's an honor to be with you. President Cullerton, Speaker Madigan, Leader Redonio, Leader Durkin, Lieutenant Governor Sanguinetti, Attorney General Madigan, Secretary White, Comptroller Mendoza, Treasurer Frerichs, and all of you, members of the General Assembly. Ladies and gentlemen, it's an honor to stand with you today to discuss the state of our state. Despite the problems and uncertainties we face, I am deeply optimistic about the future of our beloved Illinois. We have big challenges, and like many of you, I'm frustrated by the slow pace of change here in Springfield. But with great challenge comes great opportunity. By working together, we can overcome any obstacle. We have the best people and the best location of any state in America. Through bipartisan cooperation, Illinois can once again be the economic engine of the Midwest and the home of innovation and prosperity for everyone. Two years ago, when our administration came into office, we set about to return Illinois to a state of growth and opportunity. We knew that we could not simply tax our way out of our fiscal problems. We needed to grow. We needed to fix a broken system. We needed to make Illinois more welcoming to job creators, to restore confidence in government, and to ensure that all of our children could receive a high-quality education and job training so they could obtain high-paying careers here at home. Given those realities, we set key goals for our administration. First, make Illinois the most ethical and efficient state in the nation. Second, invest in education so that Illinois has the best schools and vocational training in every neighborhood and in every community. And most importantly, make our state more competitive, more attractive to job creators, to grow our economy and bring more good-paying jobs to our state. Now, working together, we've begun to accomplish these goals, but there's so much that remains to be done. Inside government, over the past 2 years, we've made great strides in ethics reform. We closed the revolving door on executive branch employees leaving government to become administration lobbyists. We tightened the gift ban loopholes that lobbyists and contractors used to influence regulators and win favor with decision makers. We increased transparency so that any resident of the state can now go online and review state spending on contracts and at-will hires. We required more comprehensive economic interest statements so we could all see who was being paid and by whom. And we cleaned up the hiring mess we inherited at IDOT. And we're working cooperatively with Michael Shackman to strengthen state hiring rules even more. We're modernizing and streamlining state government and building toward a higher level of transparency through our new Department of Innovation and Technology. In the last year, the department has protected more than 5 billion records of Illinois residents that were previously left unsecured and unencrypted. And we're moving millions of pieces of paper out of file cabinets and into the digital age. Kirk Lonbaum leads our cybersecurity efforts at DOIT, our Department of Innovation and Technology. He's working around the clock, along with his teammates, to ensure that our efforts are successful and state records are secure. He's here today. Let's give him a hand. Thank you. We've cut red tape and made it easier for constituents to interact with state government. We're moving to a digital application process for professional licenses and reducing processing times by 70%. We're cutting paper and postage costs through online license renewal notifications, saving money and more than 16,000 hours of work every year. Richard Morris works for the Department of Financial and Professional Regulation and has been a leader in our transformation to online licensing. Working across agency lines and with professional associations outside of government, he has put the time and effort in with the right people, the right level, the right time to make this initiative a success. He's here with us today. Let's all give him a hand for his service to our state. Thank you. Thank you. You're transforming state government to benefit our people and our taxpayers. We appreciate it. We're using technology and innovation to stop fraud and abuse everywhere we can. We're already saving taxpayers hundreds of millions of dollars inside Medicaid alone. And we're working together. We enacted historic reforms to crack down on unemployment insurance fraud as well. We've signed innovative new contracts now with 20 of our state government unions to drive more value for taxpayers by paying more for productivity and high performance rather than just seniority, by starting overtime pay after 40 hours rather than just 37 and a half, by adding greater flexibility in the workplace. And we've laid the groundwork for allowing volunteers to work at our state parks and health facilities. These are all common sense changes that are good for employees and taxpayers alike. We formed a bipartisan task force led by Lieutenant Governor Sanguinetti, thank you, to recommend ways we can reduce the cost of our bloated bureaucracy across the state. our worst in the nation, 7,000 units of local government. Every dollar we can save in reducing bureaucracy is a dollar we can invest in education and human services, along with reducing our highest in the nation property taxes. The task force has made 27 recommendations that we can implement together, all of us in this room together, through legislation to save hundreds of millions of dollars. The communities of Grays Lake and Haynesville are leading by example. They've saved $500,000 a year through sharing services while providing more support to their local police. Grays Lake Mayor Rhett Taylor is with us today. Let's give him a round of applause for his service and for setting an example for all of us to follow. Thank you. We've worked hard to change our broken political system and restore competitive general elections in our state. We encouraged, many of us in this room encouraged the people of Illinois to put more than 1 million signatures on petitions to get term limits and fare maps on the ballot. Unfortunately, our judges, who are themselves elected through our state political process, decided that 1 million signatures weren't enough. They decided that only you, each of you, the members of the General Assembly, could pass the necessary legislation to enable the voters to have their say. I ask you today, on behalf of all the people of Illinois, Democrats and Republicans, please do the right thing. Pass the bills to put term limits and fare maps on the ballot. Let the people of Illinois decide these issues for themselves. Let them have the ability to vote on these issues. End the power of incumbency and special interest groups and give power back to the people of our state. Illinois turns 200 in 2018. What better time to give us a brighter next 200 years than by bringing greater integrity to our political system? When it comes to providing a better future for the people of Illinois, nothing we do together is more important than educating our young people. We all want our children to be able to stay here in Illinois with good paying jobs. We want employers to come to Illinois because we have the best people. So our administration has made education from cradle to career top priority. 2 years ago, we delivered together with you unprecedented funding for our K-12 schools. And the next year we came back and did it again. In all, our kids are receiving more than $700 million more per year, our kids and our teachers, $700 million more per year than 2 years ago, including an extra $100 million more for early childhood education. Thank you. This terrible practice of proration is coming to an end. We formed a bipartisan task force to recommend changes to the unbalanced way our K-12 public schools are funded. For years and years, Illinois has provided the lowest percentage of education financial support from any state in the country. This is wrong. I personally believe this is immoral. It denies the American dream to low-income kids. We have the largest gap between funding for high-income schools and low-income schools of any state in the country. This is wrong. We have to end that, both across the state and within the city of Chicago. The task force expects to finish their work in the coming weeks, and we look forward to working on a bipartisan basis to implement their recommendations. We created the Governor's Cabinet on Children and Youth, bringing together all state agencies that serve our children to ensure that Illinois' young people are healthy, safe, well-educated, and on the road to becoming self-sufficient. The commitment, cooperation, and effective problem solving among these agencies is extraordinary. I'm so proud of their work. In partnership with external partners in the private sector, they will make Illinois a better place for all of our children. They're working with the Illinois State Board of Ed, the local high schools, our community colleges, and local employers. Our youth cabinet is striving to expand vocational training and technical apprenticeship programs for all of our high school students while they are in high school, so each of them has a clear path to an attractive career. Another critical initiative of the Children's Cabinet is reducing young children's exposure to lead. We put this at the top of the Cabinet's priority list from day one when we formed them last year. We're proud to recognize Jen Walling from the Illinois Environmental Council, who's working with us on this effort, and she's here today. Jen, thank you for your work. On Martin Luther King Day, all of us, Democrats and Republicans, stood together in signing a bill that requires all schools and daycare centers to test their drinking water regularly and inform parents of the results. Dr. King spoke about the threat of lead poisoning in 1966, so it's particularly appropriate that we're able to sign that important piece of legislation on his birthday. Reducing lead. Thank you. It's all good. Thank you. Thank you. Reducing lead exposure, which disproportionately affects low-income children and children of color, is a social justice issue. So, too, is ensuring that we provide a means for those in our criminal justice system to rehabilitate themselves and return to productive lives. Everybody deserves a second chance. We are a state of compassion and forgiveness. Everybody deserves a second chance. Over the past 2 years, our administration has worked to reform our criminal justice system, reduce recidivism, and address underlying behavioral and mental health issues for those in our systems of care in order to keep our communities safer and more compassionate. We're making great strides in implementing initial recommendations from our Commission on Criminal Justice Reform, helping nonviolent ex-offenders get back on their feet and giving them meaningful skills to find employment. We're turning around the Department of Children and Family Services. It is so critical that they provide their services well, and it's been a deeply troubled agency, as we all know, for a long time. We're making strides. It's hard, but we're making strides. We've safely reduced the juvenile justice population by 49%. We've shuttered the outdated roundhouse at Stateville Prison while repurposing two other facilities in Murfreesboro and Kewaunee as life skill centers to help nonviolent offenders return to the workforce more effectively. Thank you. Thank you. Sadly, very unfortunately, our progress in reducing nonviolent crime is being overshadowed by the skyrocketing rate of violence in Chicago. The violence occurring in Chicago every day is intolerable. We cannot let it continue. We've got to bring it to an end. Violence experts say there's no single cause and no single solution. But with the right mix of policies, with a joint commitment between the city, the county, the state, and the federal government, we can and must find solutions to curb the violence. At the Illinois State Police, we're providing the Chicago Police Department with a wide range of resources, and we stand ready to do more wherever and whenever called upon. Our troopers have already surged to counter the violence that spilled over onto our expressways, and we're committed to hiring more state police officers to help patrol Chicago expressways and other high-violence areas. Now, law enforcement plays a critical role in violence reduction, but in the end, it's a treatment, it's not a cure. Addressing the roots of this plague will take much more. To restore hope, where hope has been lost, to build a long-term future of quality education and good jobs for communities that need it the most. Most important thing we can do for the long term. Tearing down the barriers to good jobs and economic opportunity. Getting rid of blight and incentivizing redevelopment. Making sure both the state and Chicago Public Schools itself treat low-income kids the same as high-income kids. Giving parents more choices and support to give their kids a world-class education. Putting vocational training back into our high schools so young people, all young people in every neighborhood, whether they want to go to college or not, all young people can see a clear path to a career rather than falling victim to the gang recruiters. As my good friend, Reverend Marshall Hatch, has said, nothing stops a bullet like a job. That is so true. And so we're building on opportunity in every community, focused on more opportunity, so that every resident of Illinois can share in the American dream. We have got to get jobs into our neighborhoods, not just certain areas, everywhere, everywhere in every neighborhood. That's the single greatest priority we have, growing more good-paying jobs everywhere in Illinois. Now, to do that, improving transportation is critical to our goal of growing more jobs across the state. We've advanced critical transportation projects to improve the quality of life for residents and attract new families and businesses. We rebuilt 62 miles of Interstate 90 between Rockford and Chicago, replaced or rehabilitated 100 bridges along the way. We expanded the I-57-70 corridor in Effingham and completed a new flyover ramp connecting the Dan Ryan and the Eisenhower Expressways in Chicago. And here's an important one. With your approval, we need your help. We need your authorization. With your approval here in the General Assembly, we're hoping to create a public-private partnership to create a new managed lane on I-55, paid for by private investors, not taxpayers. The project will create thousands of construction jobs, expand the quality of life for our commuters, and support faster economic growth throughout the region. I hope we can do this together. It'll make a big difference. We created a partnership that draws upon the wisdom and experience of our state's top business executives to recruit employers, job creators. We call it Intersect Illinois. It includes people like Sheila Morgan of the Minority Supplier Development Council, Inga Karras, a 30-year environmental business leader and chairman of the Peru, Illinois Karras Group, Jim Wong, a CEO and business entrepreneur with more than 20 years' experience, and the chairman, Jim Schultz, a fifth-generation Illinoisan and agribusiness entrepreneur. Working together, they're trying to bring hope and opportunity across our entire state. Sheila, Inga, and Jim Wong are here today. Let's thank them for their service to our state. Thank you for your work. Thank you. They've already been successful in recruiting employers like Amazon to expand here in Illinois. Amazon's committed to bringing 7,000 new jobs across Illinois. Thousands and thousands across the state, not just in one region. It's a big deal. And we're in good talks with more employers. They'd like to see us make changes, but they're ready to come. Working with you in the General Assembly, we were also able to save jobs in the Quad Cities and in Clinton by passing legislation that ensured energy plants there stayed open. That was a big deal. Thank you. Thank you for all of you in the room. We protected families and job creators by putting caps on business and residential energy rates. That was critical. And at the same time, we were able to advance green energy by improving our renewable energy portfolio standard that will lead to billions of dollars in private investment in wind and solar energy here. Big deal. Thank you. Jeff Rage and his wife Stephanie live in Clinton with their daughters, 8-year-old Hallie and 6-year-old Maisie. They're here with us. Jeff works as a chemistry technician at the plant Stephanie is an IT analyst for State Farm, and their daughters attend Clinton Public Schools. They were understandably nervous about the potential plant closing and elated when we successfully passed the Future Energy Jobs Bill. Rage family's here today. We can all be thankful to be here in Illinois residents for many years to come. Thank you. Thanks for coming. But this is just a start. Illinois is home to some of the greatest research universities in the world. Working in partnership, we have the potential, and I'm personally 100% committed to this, we have the potential to create a technology and innovation center here in Illinois, here in the Midwest, that can rival Silicon Valley or North Carolina's Research Triangle, creating tens of thousands of high-paying jobs. We can recruit companies who are drawn to our great transportation system, our natural resources, and our Midwestern work ethic and quality of life. Working together, we can accomplish this kind of growth and opportunity. It is totally within our ability to achieve if we do it together. Critical to our success in doing this is helping our world-class research universities like the U of I and SIU, both of which are world-class research, got to extend their footprint in Illinois, form alliances with other great research institutions like the University of Chicago and Northwestern, and significantly expand their efforts in research and innovation. Our goal can be for our great research universities to drive the same stunning level, actually shocking level, of company formation, entrepreneurship, innovation, and wealth creation that Harvard and MIT have done for New England, and Stanford and Berkeley have done for California. We can do this. We can help the U of I, we can help SIU, we can help others expand their research capability and drive company formation and job creation at an incredible, exciting rate. Together, we can get it done. A few months ago, I met a native son of Illinois, Sam Yagan, who has moved his family back to Illinois after many years of success in Silicon Valley. He created a very successful high-tech company in Silicon Valley, but he wanted to be in Illinois. He loves Illinois. He came back because this is home. He loves it here. He loves the people, our values, the quality of life in our great state. He's working to make the next great tech success story right here in Illinois. In fact, he's trying to buy a tech company in Silicon Valley and bring it, move it back to Illinois. I know how he feels. I know you do too. We love this state, the people here, and our way of life. This is our home, and we'll never give up trying to make it better. I hope to introduce you to Sam. Sam was hoping to come, but he's stuck out there on the deal in California, but he's coming. I hope you can meet him. We were talking about how we're going to do this together. Now, clearly, we're excited about the achievements we've made and the unlimited opportunities open to us, but we still face significant challenges. We haven't had a full-year budget of some kind in a year and a half, and we haven't had a state budget that is truly balanced in decades. We have more than $11 billion in unpaid bills, a $130 billion unfunded pension liability, the worst credit rating in the nation. And we already have the fifth highest overall tax burden and one of the lowest rates of job creation of any state. And these problems aren't new. They didn't just happen in the last 18 months. They've been building up for many years as past governors and general assemblies, both political parties, kick the can down the road to avoid making tough decisions. Years of irresponsible borrowing and deficit spending have been devastating to human service organizations that assist children, senior citizens, people with behavioral health issues and disabilities, and other of our most vulnerable residents. It has caused student and faculty departures at our colleges and universities. Decades of undisciplined spending and uncompetitive regulations and taxes have made employers hesitant about coming or staying in Illinois, limiting job opportunities across the state. We're seeing the collective impact of these realities from Carbondale to Chicago, from East St. Louis to Danville. Families and employers are leaving. Not-for-profit service agencies and small businesses are cutting staff and services. And here's the critical point. We are failing to be compassionate because we are failing to be competitive. These problems aren't new, but these problems are now ours to solve. We can and we must do better. We know that much in our state has been broken for many years, but we know, too, that there's a way forward. There is a path to a better future for all Illinois families. All of us, on both sides of the aisle, President Cullerton, Leader Redonio, Speaker Madigan, and Leader Durkin, we all agree that we must have a truly balanced budget and we must make changes to our broken system to return our state to a path of prosperity. I would like to listen to some recent quotes that have been in the press that I've noticed. First quote, what's going on is not good for the state. The only way we can solve our problems is in a bipartisan fashion. To break the impasse, both sides must respect each other's priorities. That means negotiate, compromise. We should focus on working together and finding common ground to address the issues facing our state. Those statements were made by Leader Redonio, President Cullerton, Leader Durkin, and Speaker Madigan. I strongly agree with every single one of them. Now, let's get it done. Our state's economy could take off like a rocket ship if we could just come together on major pro-jobs changes that need legislation to take effect. Lawmakers from both parties deserve credit for working for many months to find ways to reduce regulatory costs and property tax burdens that make businesses in Illinois less competitive than our neighbors. Hopefully, we can build on these initial proposals to ensure they drive big results on job creation. And hopefully, we can work together to cut the red tape even more, reduce and filing fees and costly licensing barriers that prevent hardworking Illinoisans from qualifying for good, high-paying jobs. When it comes to the budget, we all can agree Illinois has to do something different. Our administration has offered many proposals to achieve a truly balanced budget with changes that fundamentally fix our broken system. We must remember, this is critical, I ask, we've got to remember, to keep budgets balanced in the future, our rate of economic growth has to be higher than our rate of government spending growth. It's simple math. That's just a truth. We have got to grow our economy. We've got to be more competitive if we're going to have balanced budgets. Changes to the workers' compensation system to prevent misuse and abuse, attract employers and good jobs. Property tax relief to reduce the immense burden felt by our families and businesses, to give them reason to stay here in Illinois. Term limits and fare maps, redistricting reform, where voters can pick their representatives, not the other way around, in order to restore the confidence of job creators and working families in our state. We've offered these proposals to drive the change that we all know is necessary. It's heartening to see the Senate coming together on a bipartisan basis to acknowledge these changes are needed. Let's build on that cooperation to achieve a truly balanced budget and changes that really move the needle on job creation and property tax relief. Now let me take a second off the script for just a second. I would personally like to thank the senators here today. President, leaders, thank you. Thank you for working so hard to try to come together on a bipartisan basis to find a compromise to get a truly balanced budget with changes to the system to help job creators and protect taxpayers. We all know this is very, very difficult. There's a lot of arrows. Please don't give up. Please keep working. Please keep trying. The people of Illinois need you to succeed. Thank you for your efforts. Our aim to have the most ethical and efficient government in the nation, the best schools in every community, and good jobs for all our residents, these goals are all within our reach. All of us are here to build a better future for families across Illinois. To build a future where our economy booms and job creation soars. where states around America watch with amazement as Illinois takes the lead in innovation, job growth, and economic opportunity, where people around the country say to themselves, you know what? We want to live in Illinois. That's where we want to build a business. That's where we want to start a family. That's where we can achieve the American dream. It's a future where our schools are the envy of the world, where every child from every background gets the same high-quality education from cradle to career to get on the path to wealth, prosperity, and a high quality of life. It's a future where our budgets are balanced for decades to come, where our credit ratings rise as our pension liabilities drop, where our economy grows faster than government spending, where taxpayers are treated with respect and their government squeezes every penny to go the extra mile. We've been at the bottom for far, far too long. It's time we race to the top, to lead the nation in job creation, to lead the nation in education funding and outcomes, to lead the nation in ethics and accountability, to lead the nation in poverty alleviation and violence reduction. We've made important gains in government efficiency and economic development these last 2 years. Now, let's work together to make Illinois more competitive so we can realize a better future of jobs and opportunity for all. And yes, we've made important gains in education support these last 2 years. Now, let's work together to ensure that every child in every neighborhood, in every community, has that opportunity to succeed. To ensure the violence that plagues Chicago and other communities, it's not just Chicago, that violence comes to an end. To give people hope that tomorrow will be better than today. All of us, Democrats, Republicans, everybody in between, we all have a moral obligation to work together to bring change. We together can return Illinois to a place of hope, opportunity, and prosperity. Illinois is home. All of us love it here in our home. Ultimately, we all want the same things for our home: good jobs, strong schools, safe communities. It's just a question of respecting each other's views and how we get there. If we negotiate in good faith, we can move Illinois forward as a state which is both competitive and compassionate. Now let's work together to get the job done. Thank you all. God bless you. God bless our beloved state of Illinois. And may God continue to bless the United States of America. Thank you.
Will the Committee of Escort please come forward to escort the governor from the chamber? Committee of Escort, please come forward.
Governor Bruce Rauner just concluding his annual State of the State message to a joint session of the Illinois General Assembly. This is coverage on Illinois Public Radio and Public Television. I'm Jack Titchener from WSIU in Carbondale. We're now joined on our set by Amanda Vinicky of Chicago Tonight on Channel 11 and Rich Miller of CapitalFacts.com. This was, as we expected it, from the remarks released earlier by the governor, a pretty upbeat speech. He's talking about the accomplishments, like more money for education and so on and so forth. He also touched on the reality that is, unfortunately, the city of Chicago these days. And he gave big props to the leaders in the Senate for trying to work things out to reach an agreement here to balance the budget and get some of the structural reforms that he says are necessary. What's your takeaway, Rich?
There was every state of the state or state of the union at the federal level, it's part victory lap and part forward-looking. And this was mostly victory lap. There's precious little forward-looking in this. There was some stuff about higher ed, about research institutions, creating jobs. Yet, you know, higher ed's been cut in a huge way over the last 2 years.
Not funded at all, frankly, for large parts of it. And when the governor did introduce budgets, he proposed cuts to state universities.
Yeah, I think it was 35% when he first came in. And so how do you accomplish these goals if you're not putting money in to achieve these goals, and where really, where would be a plan on paper that people could see about where he wants to go.
There's a plan at least underway. It's under construction as we talk today in the Illinois Senate, the grand bargain being developed by Senate President John Cullerton and Senate Republican Leader Christine Redonio. Let's talk about that a little bit. Right now, they're talking about a mixture of tax increases, the income tax going up to just under 5% like it used to be, up to 7% for corporations, a sales tax on some services, and this new thing, an opportunity tax on the size of business payrolls. That's going to be a big lift, particularly for the Republicans here.
A huge lift. You did hear during the State of the State address, as you noted, Jack, the governor thanked the senators for their cooperation on this. That was off script. And there was some applause, but where I noticed that missing was from the House Democratic side. They haven't been involved. The governor still didn't per se get into the details of that plan. As Rich said, not a lot of forward looking in the sense he just said, thank you, the state of Illinois needs this. He didn't back any essential parts. And what I think is a major takeaway from that whole package is that some of the governor's strongest allies, the Chamber of Commerce, the business community, the Illinois Policy Institute that he's backed in the past, are against it. And you've got to think that if the governor were truly behind it, they would call off some of that vociferous naysaying.
The Senate was hoping to have votes on some of those bills. There's 13 of them in all this week. Where's that stand, Rich?
They'll be back in a couple of weeks. Like I said, they're trying to put this thing together and hold it together at the same time. There's a million moving targets. I would say one thing, though. At least I give the governor credit because he often, when he goes off script, it's to whack somebody, right? And to criticize somebody. And at least in this instance, he offered praise for the Senate Republican and Democratic leadership for trying to put this thing together.
The overall tone was one of really very conciliatory, calling for bipartisanship and compromise, whereas he has used his speech in the past to instead ding legislators that he's talking to.
And
he also talked
about respect, and it would be nice if the organizations that he controls also lived up to that. There is some serious disrespecting going on out there.
Particularly looking at the Illinois Republican Party, for example.
And against the House Speaker, which, he's a big boy, he can take it. But if you're trying to negotiate with somebody, why are you constantly slamming them?
But the longer this goes, and over the next couple of weeks, that's more time for the various interest groups, everyone from the labor unions to the business people, to line opposition up to the various components of this.
The longer that it goes, sure, it's under construction, and maybe you can tweak it and improve it. There were hours and hours of hearings all this week that they're supposedly going to use to try and finesse these bills, and yet that is how you can have opposition build and really come out strong and kill this whole package.
Yeah, the more I look at it, the more I don't like for my own self, right? But can we move on, though, to the violence in Chicago? Because the President of the United States tweeted last night,
weighed in on it last night,
saying he might have to send in the feds. The mayor couldn't get his house in order. The governor is the governor of the entire state. He did talk some about violence. He didn't talk at all about violence prevention efforts or violence interruption efforts that have been slashed over the last couple of years, have not been funded at all, in fact. And there are those who have done studies who show when you cut this money, up goes the violence every time over the past 15, 20 years.
I'm familiar with one of them, the Cure Violence Program in the city of Chicago.
Right, out of the University of Chicago.
Right. Rich Miller, Amanda Vinicky, thanks so much for your time on the program. We certainly appreciate it. We'll be moving on next to talk with the Deputy House Majority Leader in the House of Representatives, Lou Lang. This is Illinois Public Television and radio coverage of the governor's State of the State speech live on Illinois Public Radio and Television. The governor, of course, a little earlier today called upon Democrats and Republicans to take up one of his favorite themes, and that was to pass bills out to put term limits and fare maps back on the ballot. He says the people of the state of Illinois should decide these issues themselves. He says to do this would end the power of the incumbency and special interest groups and give back power to the people of the state. In 2018, the state will be 200 years old. He says that's a great time to make this happen. He also said that
He had great news to report as far as the amount of spending that's gone to K through 12 schools over the last year. In all, kids are receiving $700 million more per year from the state than 2 years ago, including an extra $100 million for early childhood education. And he's working on that. He talked also about the K through 12 school reform funding panel that is working presently to try to find a way around the over-reliance on the property tax in the state of Illinois. Coming up next on the program, we're going to get a reaction from the House of Representatives, the Democratic Caucus, the Honorable Lou Lang, Deputy House Majority Leader from the City of Skokie. Good to have you back, Leader Lang.
Great to be here.
What's your takeaway from what the governor had to say today?
It was a speech. He didn't say much. He crowed about accomplishments that were not his. For instance, the criminal justice reform, yes, he supported it, but Democrats led the way on that. On education funding, you'll recall that in May of 2015, Democrats passed a budget that the governor vetoed with no Republican votes, and he left the education portion intact. So no, there were very limited accomplishments, and there were no directives in this speech to give us some new ideas about how to move forward.
There were several appeals to bipartisan cooperation. He said that, of course, to be honest, several times before. And at the same time, not much seems to be moving here at the Capitol. Of course, you've been watching, I'm sure, with great interest what's taking place over in the Senate as Leader Redonio and the Senate President John Cullerton of your party are trying to work out this grand bargain. It's an awful lot of heavy lifting. It's like 13 pieces of legislation all rolled into one. You got to vote for them all and approve them all. You haven't seen all the details yet, but what do you think at first blush?
Well, first, I applaud the Senate for the hard work they're doing. There's a lot of heavy lifting going on there. But I'm not sure they're going to be able to pass much of that if their tax increases are included in there and all sorts of very controversial things, without knowing in advance what the House will do, without knowing in advance what the governor will do. And some of those details are spotty, and in fact, as we speak, many of those bills are being reworked. When we move to a new hour, we have a new proposal. So until House members see exactly what they're talking about, it's hard to react.
Was it wise on the part of Leader Redonio and President Cullerton to cut out the House and the governor on this?
I wouldn't say wise or unwise. I think they're frustrated, as all of us are here, with the situation that we have ourselves in. But let me add that we don't have to be in this situation. If the governor of the state of Illinois would say, I want to work on the budget, I want to work on things that will advance our budget, then I think we could have four legislative leaders and the governor at the table. But whenever he's called a meeting, he leads with things like term limits and property tax relief, and to some these are important items, but they have nothing whatsoever to do with the budget of the state of Illinois.
As I've read through the various proposals that make up the grand bargain, a lot of it sounds like kind of a mashup of different things that the working groups in the House and Senate have talked about over the last couple of years. You know, there have been the various working groups on the budget led by Greg Harris from your caucus, for the House Democrats and all. But we're starting to see some specificity. They're talking about revenue numbers. They're talking about going back to just a hair under 5% for the individual income tax rate, going back up to 7% for the corporate income tax rate. Speaker Madigan's talked about actually cutting that corporate rate in half, right?
House Democrats would like to cut the corporate tax rate. If you really want to help corporations in Illinois grow and prosper and give them an immediate cash infusion, cut their taxes and let them put that cash immediately into job growth, where they would train new workers, where they would spend their money here in Illinois. But let me also add that while we do that, there are many corporations in Illinois that pay no state income taxes whatsoever. And so we need some corporate tax reform so that everybody's paying something.
Glad you brought that up, because there's something in there about that. What the Senate framers are calling an opportunity tax. Employers would be taxed on the size of their payrolls. Companies with less than $100,000 a year would pay $225. It'd max out at $15,000 for companies with payrolls over $1.5 billion a year. That's somewhere in the range of half a billion dollars a year in new revenues. Does this intersect with some of the House Democrats' ideas on reform?
Look, it's innovative. We appreciate innovation. It may be too complicated for many employers. They shouldn't have to go out and hire a bunch of accountants and lawyers to figure out what their tax rate is. It seems to me that we have two premises here. One, we give corporations more money to spend on job growth, so we cut their taxes. And two, to make it fair to the medium and small business, size businesses that are in many ways carrying the tax burden for the business community, we make sure that every corporation, even the largest that aren't paying any income tax now, are paying something to the state of Illinois.
What about a sales tax on services, Leader Lang? That's something the governor talked about at one point. He's not talking about it right now, but a couple of details have emerged. Well, actually yesterday, as you say, this thing keeps kind of growing by the minute or shrinking by the minute, depending on who you talk to and what's on the table. They're talking about a sales tax on services, a 5% excise tax on things like laundry, dry cleaning, your local storage locker, landscaping, so on and so forth. Other states do that. What about the state of Illinois? The
state of Illinois has talked about this for years, but people can't agree, reasonable people can't agree on what should be taxed and what shouldn't under a service tax. Where would the exemptions go? How would they go? But I want to change this narrative, Jack. There seems to be a narrative that we have a problem doing the budget. We don't have a problem doing the budget. Some have referred to a budget impasse. We don't have a budget impasse. A budget impasse occurs when everyone's at the table and you can't agree on what dollar amount goes into what line items. We don't have that problem today. What we have is a budget crisis. We have an important person named the governor of the state of Illinois who will not negotiate the budget. He will not involve himself. He will not do the heavy negotiations. And because of that, all of this other conversation may be not a waste of time, but may not be fruitful. If you got a few people from each legislative caucus in a room, we could do a budget in 2 days. The question is the willingness of the governor to actually take us to the goal line. And he has a responsibility to take us to the goal line, whether he likes Speaker Madigan or doesn't, or whether there's a majority of Democrats or a majority of Republicans. His major responsibility under the Constitution is to finish this job.
One of his concerns, of course, is are the non-budgetary items that he wants to bring in through the turnaround agenda, such as term limits here in the Capitol, legislative redistricting, workers' compensation reform, pension reform. The list is pretty long. The folks over in the Senate seem to be making some progress on this. Do you think that that might start to move the needle forward here?
Members of the House are prepared to discuss any issue that's on the table, but we do not believe that we should throw the middle class and everyone else under the bus because the governor's got an agenda that includes lowering middle class wages. When he wants to sit down and discuss the budget, House Democrats will be prepared to discuss the budget and any other important public policy items that need to be on the table.
One of the areas of interest and expertise that you bring to the table for many years around here, you were always the top negotiator on gambling expansion in the state of Illinois. And there's a part of this grand bargain that includes that, and that's they want to have 6 new casino licenses, the ones that we've talked about for many years on this program, like Chicago, Lake County, Rockford, South Suburbs, Danville, and now Williamson County. That one has been a really tough one to move here. Do you think it's got any legs in this new discussion?
Rather than discuss the details of this bill, I will simply say that gaming is a legal industry in the state of Illinois. Thousands of people leave our state every day to gamble in Wisconsin and Iowa and Missouri and particularly Indiana. If we couldn't buy a Chevy in Illinois, we would call a special session of the General Assembly to find out why. So why do we export business to other states that's already a legal business in the state of Illinois? Surely legislators can get together and figure out how to raise billions of dollars through this and also put tons of people to work.
Does the Republican Party's constant shots at the Speaker in recent years, the governor and his allies, this BossMadigan.com site and the various attacks on individual leader or individual members as the Speaker was approaching a record term for him and almost in the whole country for House leadership, does that set a negative tone here? Does it influence the way the talks are going here at the Capitol?
Members of the General Assembly on both sides of the aisle act professionally. We want to get a good product here. I am quite sure the Speaker doesn't appreciate the things that are being said about him, but he's not going to let that, nor is our House Democratic Caucus, going to let any of that get in the way of us getting to the goal line, to providing for the people of the state of Illinois, to keep our state universities running, and all the other things that we have to do to make Illinois a better place to live.
One of the things that we've talked about, you and I, a couple of times here is, you know, we seem to lurch from one stopgap budget to another one. The governor, of course, doesn't like those. I don't think anybody really likes them. They want a permanent solution to this whole thing. But, you know, you said on this program earlier that as long as this governor is governor, that's probably what we're going to end up doing, because of the very reasons you've been talking about for the last few minutes.
Look, whenever the governor has backed off of his anti-middle class agenda and his what he calls reforms, and he sits down at the table, six or seven times in the last year, we've passed something. We passed something to fix his Good Friday cuts to the social service industry. We passed something to help colleges. We passed something to help MAP grant recipients. We passed something so that local communities before the winter could get their money for road salt. These are all areas where the governor sat down and said, I'll put my agenda aside, let's do this. And if you would do that again, we'd have a budget in two or three days, Jack.
Leader Lang, thank you so much for your time on Illinois Lawmakers. Always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Pleasure to be here, sir.
As we pointed out a little earlier, the governor did touch upon the city of Chicago and the violent crime epidemic that has been impacting the city. Of course, as Rich Miller pointed out a little earlier on the program, President Donald Trump said the carnage has got to stop or else the feds, as he put it in his tweet, are going to be called in. The governor says that the state is stepping in and doing its part. The Illinois State Police is providing the Chicago Police Department with assistance, and they stand ready to do more. So a number of different things he pointed to about law enforcement. And we are now joined on the program by one of the senior Republican members of the Illinois Senate. Not so senior. I think I'm still older than you are.
Jack.
State Senator Bill Brady, who's a deputy Republican leader in the Illinois Senate. Great to have you back on the program.
Good to be with you.
Your governor, the chief executive, of course, sounded a pretty upbeat theme today. He talked a lot about bipartisan cooperation. Leader Lang, who was just here, said, well, we really wish we'd see some of that from him. What is your takeaway today?
Well, I think we've seen a lot of it from him. First of all, I think he's an upbeat, positive attitude kind of guy. He believes in Illinois. And I think today when he went off script, and he said, you know, I really appreciate the bipartisan nature in which the Senate is working with Chris Redonio and with John Culleton and the members who we have been working together. And I think he appreciates that. He realizes that he's governor, but he can't just write the whole script, that he's got to work with us in a bipartisan way. He's been very positive about the movement that we've had in the Senate. I think it was reflective in his attitude today.
But of course, at the same time, the governor and his political allies keep bashing the Democrats in the building. They're even bashing some of the Republicans who are trying to, who might possibly get on board with this bipartisan arrangement that your leader, Leader Redonio, and the Senate President, John Culleton, are working on. They're saying, don't let this guy vote for a 30% tax increase.
You know, I think you've got to differentiate between who you call his allies and the governor. The governor's comments have been very positive throughout this whole process. I may be reading between the lines, but the problem really occurred in December when the Speaker, at least the way I interpreted John Culleton's view, is he wasn't going to get the Speaker of the House to cooperate on any meaningful solution. That's when our leader and John Culleton, Chris Redonio and John Culleton, reached out together to begin the process of a compromise in the Senate chamber. And I think the governor's embraced that. At least in my discussions with the governor and my discussions with the staff, he's embraced that positive movement because he knows we need to do something. And I think it's very positive. Now, there are people who are against much of what's in this that have been allied with the governor before, but I don't think that's coming from the governor.
You're one of the senior members of the leadership team with the Senate Republicans, and you know this place like the back of your hand. Do you have any sense of who picked up the phone and called who first? Was it Christine Redonio calling John Culleton or vice versa?
Well, you know, they've got a good relationship, a personal relationship. And I think they just talked after the breakdown in the negotiations in December and said, let's do some things. And Chris, of course, reached out to her members, her leadership team. We're all for trying to work out a solution. I don't think there's any axes to grind in the Senate. It's about putting egos and putting politics aside for the good of the people of Illinois, and that's what we're trying to do. Now, make no mistake, when you operate under a court-ordered spending plan for a year and a half or 2 years, we've got some serious issues that need to be dealt with. But as the governor articulated, I believe Senator Colton agrees there needs to be protection for the taxpayers. If we're going to increase income taxes, we need to provide property tax relief. If we're going to pass this, it needs to be a job-building program. And I think he also believes it's got to be a balanced budget.
Let's dig into that a little deeper. You know, we talked a little bit earlier on the program about the revenue side of this. There's talk of raising the income tax back into like 4.99%, which would not be higher than the 5% that was there, but not noticeably different. There's some other ideas like this new opportunity tax on payrolls. What is that? Tell me how that works.
Well, first of all, let's talk about where it came from. The business community came to us and said, you know, we'd like to step up. We've complained about the franchise tax. We think that's a negative tax, but we do realize that we want the business community to contribute. They've come forward with something. I think it needs a lot of work, and we're going to work on it because we want to make sure that it fosters small business creation. And I'm concerned, I think as many people are, that this needs a lot of work in order to be successful. Business wants to pay its fair share, and it wants to be at the table, but it's got to be fair for all business. So this is a replacement of a franchise tax, some would say. It would cost every business corporation a little bit of money, depending on your size, maybe more. Caps at $15,000, lowest amounts $250 a year. But I'm not sure it's quite there yet. Again, a lot of this negotiation is fluid. I'm very positive about the reaction we're getting to it, and I think a lot of it's workable. That's something that needs some work.
Some of these, that one just surfaced yesterday here at the Capitol, at least surfaced publicly. Oh, yeah. You know, before that, there was another idea in there that might raise like $700 million by taxing sugary drinks.
Right.
That, there's a lot of pushback on that.
Absolutely.
Fell off the table. Where was the primary opposition beyond the beverage industry in the state?
Well, I think the consumer. The consumer would be the one that ended up paying this tax. It would have been a rather large tax. They called it a sugar tax. It really didn't make sense because it was non-sugary drinks as well. It just didn't make sense. And I think once we saw that, we took it immediately off the table. There was pushback, and this is what the negotiation is. In order to put something together in a bipartisan fashion, it's going to have to be balanced, take input. Leader Redonio, President Culleton have taken that input, and they're moving as a very fluid package. But again, the principles of this package are it's got to be a balanced budget for 18. It's got to be parity in terms of income tax increases and property tax relief. And we need to make sure it's a plan that grows jobs. And I think that's one of the most positive things. Senator Colton realizes that we need business reforms as part of this package to grow jobs. He's laid that on the table. I think it's a very positive step, and it's an important part of why we're making the progress we're making.
What about this excise tax on services? The governor has talked about that. A lot of states do that. It used to be called the haircut tax, although that profession is not listed in this particular bill at the moment. Okay. But they're talking about a 5% tax on laundry, dry cleaning, your storage units, repair, maintenance services, amusements, all sorts of things like that. There's probably something in there for all of those areas to start pushing back on you guys for proposing.
Oh, certainly. And as you well know, when special interests get involved, it becomes more difficult. This was aligned much like Wisconsin. The emphasis behind this is that consumption is not just on goods. It's moving more from goods to services. And that in order to have a fair tax plan, and I will tell you, regardless of what comes out here, it will be my goal, whether I'm involved in the tax part of this or not, to completely reorganize our entire tax package so that it fosters growth. But let me just say, we've got to come up with the revenue somewhere. Most of these tax enhancements, whether they be temporary or not, are necessary in order to balance this budget. The court-ordered budget is costing taxpayers a lot more money than no solution at all.
That's right, because it's 90% of the state budget being spent at 2015 rates at a time when you're about $6 billion off in revenues, right?
Exactly. So if we don't come up with a solution, there's a real hidden tax here that's multiple billions of dollars in excess of what a solution like this would look at. And that's got to be part of it, realizing that give and take, we can't continue under the quarter system because the taxpayers really take it. This is a better solution if we can come up with one that's passable.
Some of the things also that are in here are issues that affect you directly, like workers' compensation. You're a home builder. You know this one
up
close and personal. Republicans have talked about wanting to get causation in here for years. It doesn't sound like you're quite there. How close are you to having something that would appease the governor, make the governor happy on this?
And I think the governor will be happy if the business community's happy. We know that workers' compensation rates in Indiana are a fraction of what they are in Illinois. I mean, a fraction. And we know that their injured workers don't go without relief. So we need a plan that works. What the governor's concerned about is what I'm concerned about is what helps the business community invest money in Illinois and create jobs. Workers' compensation is one of the best ways we can do that.
Can we get that done in the next couple of weeks?
I think we can. I really think we can. And even if we don't get what some people call causation, there's a lot of areas where we can get a significant number of savings that will help us grow jobs.
Senator Brady, thanks so much. It's always good to have your insights on the program. We certainly appreciate your time today. I know you got to get back to work because this thing is still very much a work in progress.
Thank you.
You're very welcome, sir. Working with the General Assembly, Governor Rauner earlier talked about the success, the bipartisan success, in saving the nuclear power plants at Clinton and the Quad Cities. Those protected jobs, families, by putting caps on business and residential energy rates. At the same time, the governor says lawmakers in both sides of the party were able, both sides of the aisle were able to advance green energy concerns by improving the renewable portfolio standard that will lead to billions of dollars in private investment and wind energy, solar energy and wind energy, the kinds of things that he said, if we can just kind of apply this model to other issues like the budget, workers' comp, and other things, we can move forward. We're now joined on the program by Senator Dan Biss of Evanston. Good to have you back on the program.
Thank you so much for having me.
You've been watching this whole thing unfold in recent days as far as the working document between Leader Redonio and your Senate President, John Cullerton, Democrat of Chicago. Let's talk a little bit about that. How is the process going in terms of, let's say, negotiation from the ranks, from the individual lawmakers who have to go back home, in your case, to Evanston and say, yeah, they're talking about raising your taxes again?
Right. Well, listen, this is a giant, complicated package. There is a lot not to like, I think probably from most points of view, in it. There's also encouraging signs of compromise and adult conversation, which is welcome, I think, from everyone's point of view. And there's a lot of moving parts, and so we're all trying to express our specific concerns. Hey, here's a component of a particular bill I like or don't like, but also our kind of big picture concerns. What's the right direction for the Senate Democratic Caucus to go? What's the right direction for the state to go? And what's the best way to get out of this terrible situation that we're in right now, a situation that has done unbelievable damage to the state of Illinois?
There's been a lot of pushback we've read in the press and the like about, you know, from the Republican caucus about, oh, wow, it's an awful lot of revenue to raise. How's that sitting on your side of the aisle?
Well, I would say this. Governor Rauner took office and walked into a horrible budget crisis. The tax rate had just dropped and there was a bunch of missing revenue. And from day one, his position has kind of been, well, listen, the Democrats want to raise your taxes, he claims. On the other hand, I want to reform Illinois, and so the right deal is I'll give the Democrats some taxes, the Democrats will give me some reform, and we'll all work it out eventually. What I would say is that that's not accurate. And the governor is the one who's come out strongest for a tax increase. You can tell that because every time he gives a state of the state address, a budget address, he can't give a balanced budget without new taxes. So the governor wants a tax increase. He's made that clear in his budget addresses both in 2015 and 2016. And therefore, this idea that the bargain is revenue for reform is, in my opinion, just dishonest. And so I think the question isn't, do we like this particular tax package? We need more revenue if we're going to properly fund the state. The question is, what's the right way forward A, to get the revenue the state needs to fund the priorities that all of our constituents across the state have, and B, what's the right kind of negotiation that will produce something that everyone gives something, but ultimately we're creating something that from everyone's point of view is better than where we were before we started.
And you know, he talked about some of the things that you've been involved in. You worked on pension reform. Mm-hmm. You've studied that thing from top to bottom. You've been in some of the negotiations that the Senate President John Cullerkins had an idea teed up for practically almost a year here. Mm-hmm. Is he ready to pull the trigger on that? It's part of the package. Will it do the kind of work that's needed to make up for $130-some-odd right. billion-dollar unfunded liability?
Well, listen, the pension issue is complicated, and these pieces of legislation are themselves especially complicated because they involve employees making lots of different choices. I don't think there's broad agreement yet on whether or not it would be upheld by the courts, and it's very hard to analyze what the savings would be. And let me be clear about this. The $130 billion pension problem is not going to be fixed by a reform bill, anybody's reform bill under any circumstances. The $130 billion pension debt problem will be solved by painstakingly over a very long period of time with discipline paying into the system as the actuaries demand us to do. And whatever changes are or aren't made will never be on a path to solvency unless we commit ourselves to doing that in a way that's credible and binding.
It's kind of, as your House Democratic counterpart, Elaine Neckritz, who is also one of the pension negotiators, said, at the end of the day, we have to pay this thing. We really don't have an opportunity not to do it based on what we know. There are other aspects, there are other things that are in there, like, for example, expanded gaming. We've talked about that a little bit. That could bring in several hundred million dollars a year, but it's not something that immediately would jumpstart the Illinois economy, would it?
Oh, certainly not.
It's several things. It's several years out.
Oh, certainly not. There's no. I hope no one thinks that building a casino would be the spark that our economy needs. I don't like the idea too much in the first place, though it's certainly something we have to talk about considering the depth of the hole we're in. Mm-hmm. Listen, this is not a package that's going to itself jumpstart the economy. Whether I wind up voting for it or against it, the package that we might eventually enact is one that would put us on a path to fiscal solvency, stop the hemorrhaging, allow us to rebuild our social safety net, our university system,
yes.
And then having done that, be the kind of place that people want to come to. The tragedy of the last 2 years is that we're hemorrhaging people because we've created a system where if you want to go to college, Illinois looks like it might not be the place for you anymore. If you want to invest, Illinois looks like it might not be the place for you anymore. That we have to stop, not with some magic trick, but just by sane policy that puts us on a path to a place of being solvent, having a good credit rating, and looking like the stable place that people want to be in.
Well, I hear from business leaders, yes, we want workers' compensation reform. We want a lot of these things. We want tax reform. But right now, we want a stable budget for the state of Illinois.
They want to live in a place that doesn't look like the banana republic that Bruce Rauner has created in the last 2 years, a situation of a year and a half of no budget that is unprecedented in our nation's history. That is not the cause of all our problems. When Bruce Rauner took office in January of 2015, we already had lots of problems.
He inherited a lot.
He inherited a lot. But what he's created has exacerbated it dramatically. And the first thing we have to do is clean up that most recent mess.
In the case of this particular grand budget, we're talking about a multitude of things that are all very complicated issues in their own right, like workers' comp or pensions and so forth. And we're trying to get it all done in one bill. What's the thinking behind 13 different pieces of this thing having to be passed at one time?
Well, it's a complicated set of people at the table, all who want something and all who are a little bit distrustful of each other, and sometimes this is a tactic that can help bring people together. I think, again, the ultimate question we have to be asking, though, is how much is it going to cost to pay for the government we need, and who should we take the money from to fund it properly? And I want to make sure we don't live in a box that's so cramped in by the thinking of yesterday that we wind up making a decision tomorrow that's dangerous for working class and middle class families.
One of the things that happens here at the Capitol on a lot of issues is when you add a lot of different items to a particular issue or bill or act, you have what we call the Christmas tree effect.
Right.
Once you get done hanging ornaments on the thing, it sometimes falls over mm-hmm. on its own weight. Is that a danger here, given the complicated nature of this?
Of course it is. And part of what I would say is let's we might want to consider taking little steps one at a time. You know, the last 2 years have been one of historic level of inaction and destruction and breakdown. And I would say one option we might have is to do one thing at a time to begin the recovery. But on the other hand, if we can do everything all at once in a way that's beneficial to the state and satisfactory to most people, then so much the better.
Some of the guests earlier on the program, we were talking about the, you know, you had hoped to start voting on this right after the governor's speech this week. But as we saw yesterday, some things went on the table, some things went off the table, like the sugary drink right. tax that came off the table. I also understand the Senate's version of raising the minimum wage also mm-hmm. came off the table. That's something the House Democrats wanted to see, too.
Listen, for me as someone with progressive values, what I would say that we have to do in Illinois are two things. Number one, find adequate revenue by taxing the people who can afford it, which is to say taxing the rich, taxing the biggest corporations, not taxing middle class families and the working poor. And then number two, raise wages. And so designing a revenue package that's fair, to me, is job number one. And designing a way to raise wages, including a minimum wage increase, is job number two. And so, of course, I think Democrats and progressives across the state should be attached to those priorities and should fight hard to make sure we do those things correctly.
If you're able to get this put together in the next few weeks here, what kind of reception do you think it'll have in the House?
I think it's totally unclear. I think there's a lot exciting about the concept of working together to make progress. There's a lot not to like in this package. And I think what we all need to do is ask ourselves, where do we want the state to be in 20 years? Where do we want the state to be in 10 years, 2 years, 1 year, and 6 months, and do everything we possibly can to get out of this place we're in now, which is dangerous, moving in the wrong direction quickly, sometimes irreparably, and move in the right direction as quickly as we can.
We wish both parties the best of luck in this.
We'll need it.
Senator Biss, thanks so much for your time. Always appreciate
it's good to see you.
Having you here on the program. Thank you so much. We'll be continuing with the program here in just a moment. As the governor pointed out, and so have our guests in the last few minutes, the state of Illinois hasn't had a full budget of some kind in over a year and a half. And it hasn't had a budget that's been truly balanced in many ways over decades. The state is over $11 billion in arrears to its creditors. There's, as we pointed out, the $130 billion unfunded pension liability for the five public pension plans in the state of Illinois. Our credit rating, unfortunately, the worst in the nation. But as the governor pointed out, there's a way out of this, and so have the guests on the program here today, and that is by working in a bipartisan manner to try to come up with a revenue package as well as a series of reforms. That's still under some discussion at this point as far as how that will take shape. The Senate is taking its crack at the idea. And we are expecting the House will see what they think about it in the not-too-distant future. Joining us now on the program on Illinois Lawmakers on Illinois Public Television and Radio across the state, the House Republican leader, Jim Durkin of Western Springs.
Good Jack, to have thank you, here. You to have me on. I appreciate
it's
it. Good to see you. You too.
Well, so first of all, your thoughts about the governor's speech today. It was, like most of his speeches, upbeat. He talked about a lot of accomplishments, despite the lack of a budget and all, which we'll talk about that. But he talked about a lot of things like the Quad Cities nuclear plant, Clinton. He gave evidence of where Democrats and Republicans actually joined forces and worked together to get some things done.
There's a model we can work off of to be able to work to accomplish some important things. And we've seen that over the past few years. I think the governor gave a great speech today. There was no politics in it. And some people will often talk about the governor is all political, but the fact is he wasn't. And I think it was very important that he stresses and talked about the things that he has been able to achieve in the last few years. People are lost with the debate over the budget, but the fact is we've done a lot of other things. Just, you know, and people talk about, you know, sometimes the governor may be partisan, but I was just looking up some research in the House. Of the 491 bills that were signed into law, 320 of them were Democrat, 170 were Republican. So this governor calls it like he sees them. If he had animus or spite towards the Democrats, he probably could have taken the veto pen out. But I think the governor has done a very good job managing a very difficult situation, a very partisan situation. which is unfortunately has been the manner of business in the House for the past 2 years.
But the hyper-partisan nature of the thing, we just came off of a general election battle. It's one of the most brutal and expensive I've ever seen. I think one figure showed that between the Democrats and the Republicans, they spent $100 million about evenly divided, beating the tar out of each other. And we walk back in, the election's not even, you know, in the rearview mirror yet. Websites pop up trying to convince Democrats in the House to vote against Speaker Madigan and all these things. At the same time, while the Senate Republican leader is trying to negotiate this package with the Democrats, she's getting attacked by traditional Republican allies. So there's all this stuff going on swirling around the edges of this.
In one way or the other over the years, it's been of this type of nature, and that's the way this building works. It's been a little more elevated over the past year, but when Governor Rauner was elected, it kind of took the Democrats off stride. They haven't had to work with a Republican governor in many years, and it was their way and the only way. Now Governor Rauner is a pretty tough guy, and he's very mindful of the spending that's been going on in the state, and he's told the Democrats that, you know, we're not going to continue down this type of budgeting, and they challenged him on it, particularly in the House. They're passing budget appropriation bills that were $9 billion, $7 billion, and $4 billion out of balance. So the fact is that they've never really gotten around to working with a Republican governor, one who is not going to get pushed around, but one who's very strong and very committed towards turning around Illinois, even if it's going to take some very difficult votes.
You're a veteran of this place. You know how the House works, how it works well, sometimes how it doesn't work so well. The fact is, the Senate's taken the lead on this. Your good colleague, Christine Verdonio of Lamont, the Senate Republican leader, is working with John Cullerton, the Democratic Senate president, on a package. Why couldn't that happen over here?
Well, I will share what, and I agree with what the governor said. I give the Senate high praise for trying to accomplish something. I'm not going to comment on the actual work that they're producing. We'll see.
I'm not trying to get you to do that.
No, I know that. But the fact is they're working together. Mm-hmm. And they have the relationship between those two senators is a little different than myself and the Speaker. I have a respectful relationship with the Speaker, but it's clearly not the same as what's going on in the Senate. But I know that the Speaker and I, we have worked on major issues in the past, and we've been able to accomplish bills, legislation, and putting together votes on whether it goes back to my first big test was on their pension reform 3 years ago. And just over the last couple of years, I've worked with Democrats on a number of issues, whether it's on extension of the medical marijuana program, the heroin epidemic. We had House Bill 1, which I worked with the Democrats and also in the administration to get that made into law. So there are examples where we've been able to find common ground where we've worked together. But unfortunately, when it comes to the greatest responsibility we have to pass a balanced budget is something that's been very daunting, but also one which the Democrats are not appreciative, nor they believe that the governor's pathway towards success for Illinois doesn't meet theirs. And that's hence the problem.
What's kind of refreshing about watching this from afar and up close and personal here at the Capitol is that both the Senate leaders, Democrat and Republican, have put some political capital on the table.
Yes.
Particularly when it comes to the Senate Republicans and the possibility of having to vote for a tax increase, and to a certain degree the Democrats as well, because we saw how bitterly the tax issue was talked about in the elections. For the Republicans, though, as you look at this thing, do you think that looking at the 13 or so items that are in this grand bargain, will there be enough structural reforms in terms of the kinds of workers' compensation reform, pension reform, term limits, all these things, will there be enough of that in there for the people in your caucus, which is 4 seats larger now?
Yes.
Will it happen?
That needs to happen. Mm-hmm. Workman's compensation reform, pension reform, meaningful reforms, not just small changes, which I've seen over the past 2 weeks coming out of the Senate, but there has to be meaningful changes in work comp reform and getting back at and fighting and going back at the pension problem. I mean, it's been almost 3 years since we've had that, 2 years since that decision's been made. We have to do that. It's swallowing up state government. But again, for Republicans to consider voting for any type of revenue package, there has to be a trade-off on meaningful structural reforms to the state of Illinois, mainly consistent with what the governor's been talking about. He's narrowed them considerably down to work comp, pensions, and a few other matters, but that's extremely important to us because that's how we're going to build our economy. I've spent a lot of time traveling the state over the last few years. I've talked to large manufacturers, to small mom and pops, and also to municipal leaders. Workman compensation reform is the single largest cost that they're incurring right now, which is really inhibiting their ability to grow, to be able to employ, not only in a public level, but mainly in the private level. And you know, the rates that they're currently paying on workman's compensation is grossly disproportionate to the Midwest. So we have to do more.
Well, Republicans traditionally talk about causation in that. I'm not hearing that that's part of the discussion, but we're not hearing all the details on that. The complaint I hear a lot from your caucus in both the House and the Senate is you're just nibbling around the edges. You're not doing really meaningful stuff that lowers the premiums.
Correct. Exactly. And I think that the Democrats should look at the Attorney General's report from approximately 3 years ago, in which Attorney General Madigan specifically stated that the workman's compensation laws in Illinois are insufficient, and there needs to be a strong causation standard in the law that is going to help reduce costs for the state of Illinois, because they do pay a lot in workman's compensation benefits, but also and indicated that the law that was passed back in 2011 didn't go far enough. And she specifically talked about causation being part of the solution to the crisis that is currently occurring with our businesses and our small businesses, our local governments regarding work comp insurance.
Can you do it in such a way, though, that you don't run afoul of the worry that Speaker Madigan has and a lot of the Democrats have here, is that you end up sending workers to the emergency room because they don't have access to adequate care if they're hurt on the workplace?
I've heard that before, but I don't think that that's the case, and I think that's just more smoke that's being spewed by Democrats who don't want to change because they know that, you know, workman's compensation laws are, you know, the people that are who oversee it, the ones that are most concerned about it, are the trial lawyers and also AFL-CIO, who are major supporters of the Democrat caucus.
House Republican Leader Jim Durkin of Western Springs, great to have you on the program.
Thank you, Jack.
We appreciate it, sir. And that is it for this special live edition of Illinois Lawmakers on Illinois Public Television and Radio. We will be back on Wednesday, February 15th at 12 noon for the governor's annual budget message to a joint session of the Illinois General Assembly. From all of us at Illinois Lawmakers, so long from Springfield.